Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything, from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
So I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear. I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway. Much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through. Without exemption, I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were.
Sometimes, in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. not, I regret it. I do regret it, particularly where it may have caused personal pain. Too much is at stake for us to be consumed with these issues. But one thing I can promise you this, I will always tell you the truth.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times.
Sometimes, in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it. I do regret it.
This is one of the reasons that I have long objected to calling what happened on January 6th a riot, because the lack of a riot implies some spontaneity.
I mean, is it incredible or whatnot? We had Frank, not this is the last word, Michael Lawson. It is Friday, September the 10th, 2022. It is 3:08 p.m. And you heard it from Mr. Frank, doing it his way. And he says, regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. And then we heard from Mr. DJD, admitting he had made a few. I had to play it over again so you can understand it. He has regrets that he has made a few mistakes. But you know what? Every clock, you know the old saying, every clock strikes 12 twice during the day. Every maniac can be wrong and will admit they're right twice a day. This man is a fool and is finally caught up to them. I think Liz Cheney presented such a fantastic, fantastic fantastic presentation of what needs to be done. I just think it's incredible. Just listen to this.
about the discontinuity in the timeline that disproves conclusively the idea that this was a rally that got out of hand.
And just to make a final point here, which is that if the plan is to storm, if the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys want to storm the Capitol, they can't do it just themselves. There's a few hundred of them. It would be hard, right? They clearly are thinking about that. They're headed there while the president's speaking. But they need a key thing.
They need a mob.
They need a mob behind them where it doesn't work. And the guy in the ellipse, who everyone's listening to, tells them, now we're all going to go down to the Capitol.
And I'll go with you.
And I'll go with you.
But no, at that time, this is the very important point. It was kind of a slow back and forth between the documentary filmmaker and Benny Thompson. But he draws out of him. Now, what time was it that you and the Proud Boys were walking down the mall, the unguarded mall, 10:30? That's very early in the day, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
And the filmmaker says, I was surprised by this. Yes, because I thought we were there to film their presence at the Trump rally. But you're exactly right. By the time Trump told people to go to the Capitol, the Proud Boys had already gone and started the process of breaking into the seat of government. And then he flung the mob at them to follow them in through the breach. Presumably that
overthrew that whole second piece is the other half of what Liz Cheney established at the beginning, that the commander-in-chief of the United States military, yeah, the chief executive of the Department of Justice, the person who should have and would have called the National Guard was AWOL, but the person who unleashed the mob to complement the conduct of the two militia groups charged with seditious conspiracy was Donald J. Trump.
And he was on the spot.
He was on the spot. We're wondering how did this is just spontaneous. All these people just got there and just spontaneously that they broke into the Capitol. Well, we found out yesterday that was a lie. Remember, this committee said, we're going to tell you things that you have no even thought in your mind. The Proud Boys broke into the White House at 10:20 a.m. The mob didn't get down there until 12 o'clock. They went in and breached looking for the Speaker of the House, looking for the Vice President, knowing where they were at, and they were going to come out and tell the rest of the mob that was going to go there. Meanwhile, DOJ, the orange man who was in the White House, was whipping up everybody. So they were frothing at the mouth. That's what he did. He got them to froth at the mouth just so this could happen. I mean, it's so difficult to understand that we have a president of these United States that would have the nerve to completely kill our Constitution. Because to him, it was never about the Constitution. Even the Southern Confederates didn't want to get rid of the country. But this man wanted to get rid of the entire Constitution because he wants to make it an autocracy with him as the controlling factor. He said it so many times, and don't believe anything he said. He doesn't really believe. They talked about kidding. He don't kid. Play. Everything he says is absolutely straight up and down. There are no curves or nothing. The man is a consummate liar. And he'll lie to anybody who he thinks will, in the end, say, you know, I think maybe you're right. Anybody. He will do that too. He'll lie to anybody that will even give him the next day. He will lie to anybody. The problem is,
How do you take care of someone like that? How do you take care of someone that would just lie to you? That's the problem. How do you take care of a person that will just lie about every single thing he said, even if you hear him? Even if you hear him, he will lie to you. Even if you know the truth, and he knows you know the truth, he will still lie to you. That's a major problem. That's a major, major problem. He will never, ever tell you the truth. Never tell you the truth. Never tell you the truth. And this is a problem where we have to now think about. Should this man even be in the conversation with anything? How can we talk to someone? How do we talk to someone that is completely, completely a liar, that you can't believe? How do you talk to someone that way? How do you talk to someone that way? You can't talk to someone who's that way. You can't talk to anyone that's that way. And more, even more, what are you to do when someone like that comes to you and says that I will protect you? How do you say to someone like that, okay, thank you, I can trust you? How the heck can you even mention anything like that to someone that you definitely can't believe, that will even suggest that it will be an advantage to have someone like that? I don't understand that. How do you even think that something like that can happen? How do you even contemplate the ability for you to reasonably believe that just pull it down? Oh, you got it right? Okay, I'm talking to my grandson here. Anyway, how do you reasonably believe this man, Donald Trump, has been in office for over 4 years and then was going to say, you know what? There were some times I was wrong. He's never been wrong, and he's told you that constantly. Here's the problem I have. Why do you believe him? Why would you believe the next time he'll be telling us the truth? Why would you even believe that? Is he God? Is he the great leader that we all look up to? That he'll never do anything that is completely without honor? How do we trust anybody like that? We now know that the Proud Boys went down there at 10:20 a.m. at the Capitol and went to the back doors of the Capitol to see where the weakest points were. And when they did that, they were able to go in. And let's see, I'm looking for something on here and I didn't see it. I don't know what happened here. Let me go up here. Because I know that's not the... let's just wait 1 minute here. I'm trying to see what happened to my... nope, that's not... That's 132. So I'm looking for my quote that I was getting ready to play for you guys. And I don't see it. This is a bad situation here. I put it in twice into the studio and it has not come out yet. This is a major problemo. Why does this happen? And come on, call up studio one more time to see where this quote is. And I don't know. I don't see it. It's not in my studio. Oh, and it just came up. Let's see what happened here. I don't see it at all. It has not come up. Let's try it one more time. Update. What is this? No, that's not it. Let's try it one more time. And typing it in to see if it comes up. Maybe that was a problem. I have no idea, but we will find out in a minute. We'll get back to this clown. Here it is. Oh, okay. Now let's see if that brings it up. All right, now. Oh, no. Just type. Yeah, when you're doing all this typing here, and okay, now, let's see what happens now. Now, I don't know. Maybe let's see what happens. I don't know. Oh, there it is. Now, we know how this man is as far as his ability to lie to everybody and to tell everybody how smart he is, how much smarter he is of everybody. It reminds me of watching Perrault on TV, you know, the Belgian detective Perrault. When I watch him on TV, they all tell him, you know, how do you know that maybe the thief or the criminal is a lot smarter than you? He says, well, I don't believe that. So why? Because the little gray matter that I have in my brain is a lot stronger than them. So let's just see. This is another case of someone who's too smart for their own good.
The question is, do I have a God complex?
Dr. Kessler says yes.
Which makes me wonder if this lawyer has any idea as to the kind of grades one has to receive in college to be accepted at a top medical school. If you have the vaguest clue as to how talented someone has to be to lead a surgical team. I have an MD from Harvard. I am board certified in cardiothoracic medicine and trauma surgery. I have been awarded citations from 7 different medical boards in New England, and I am never, ever sick at sea. So I ask you, when someone goes into that chapel and they fall on their knees and they pray to God that their wife doesn't miscarry, or that their daughter doesn't bleed to death, or that their mother doesn't suffer acute neural trauma from post-operative shock, who do you think they're praying to? Now, you go ahead and read your Bible, Dennis, and you go to your church and with any luck, you might win the annual raffle, but if you're looking for God, He was in operating room number 2 on November 17th, and he doesn't like to be second-guessed. You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
I am
God. That was a. I love that line from the movie Malice, Alec Baldwin. Of course, he got caught in the end also. He thought he was God. And as I've been saying for over 7 years, the orange man who was in the White House is going to get caught also. And I believe that these January 6th committees and the Atlanta inquiry, the judgment in Atlanta and in New York, are going to be the seal in his tomb. Now, I'd just like you to hear the intro into the that was given by Benny Thompson yesterday. I thought it was fabulous. And I want you to hear that.
The Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol will be in order. Without objection, the chair is authorized to declare the committee in recess at any point. Pursuant to House Deposition Authority Regulation 10, the chair announces the committee's approval to release the deposition material presented during tonight's hearing. Thanks to everyone watching tonight for sharing part of your evening to learn the facts and causes of the events leading up to and including the violent attack on January 6, 2021. Our democracy, electoral system, and country. I'm Benny Thompson, chairman of the January 6, 2021 committee. I was born, raised, and still live in Bolton, Mississippi, a town with a population of 521, which is midway between Jackson and Vicksburg, Mississippi, and the Mississippi River. I'm from a part of the country where people justify the actions of slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, and lynching. I'm reminded of that dark history as I hear voices today try and justify the actions of the insurrectionists on January 6th. 2021. Over the next few weeks, hopefully you will get to know the other members, my colleagues up here, and me. We represent a diversity of communities from all over the United States, rural areas and cities, East Coast, West Coast, and the Heartland. All of us have one thing in common. We swore the same oath. That same oath that all members of Congress take up on taking office and afterwards every 2 years if they are reelected. We swore an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The words of the current oath taken by all of us that nearly every United States government employee takes have their roots in the Civil War. Throughout our history, the United States has fought against foreign enemies to preserve our democracy, electoral system, and country. When the United States Capitol was stormed and burned in 1814, foreign enemies were responsible. Afterward, in 1862, when American citizens had taken up arms against this country, Congress adopted a new oath to help make sure no person who had supported the rebellion could hold a position of public trust. Therefore, congresspersons and United States federal government employees were required for the first time to swear an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That oath was put to test on January 6, 2021. The police officers who held the line that day honored their oath. Many came out of that day bloodied and broken. They still bear those wounds, visible and invisible. They did their duty. They repelled the mob and ended the occupation of the Capitol. They defended the Constitution against domestic enemies so that Congress could return, uphold our own oath, and count your votes to ensure the transfer of power, just as we've done for hundreds of years. But unlike in 1814, it was domestic enemies of the Constitution who stormed the Capitol and occupied the Capitol, who sought to thwart the will of the people to stop the transfer of power. And so they did, so at the encouragement of the President of the United States, the President of the United States trying to stop the transfer of power, a precedent that had stood for 220 years, even as our democracy had faced its most difficult test. Thinking back again to the Civil War in the summer of 1864, the President of the United States believed we would be doomed to bid for re-election. He believed his opponent, General George McClellan, would wave the white flag when it came to preserving the Union. But even with that grim fate hanging in the balance, President Lincoln was ready to accept the will of the voters, come what may. He made a quiet pledge. He wrote down the words, "This morning, as for some days past, it seems exceedingly probable that this administration will not be reelected. Then it will be my duty to so cooperate with the president-elect. It will be my duty." Lincoln sealed that memo and asked his cabinet secretaries to sign it sight unseen. He asked them to make the same commitment he did, to accept defeat, if indeed defeat was the will of the people, to uphold the rule of law, to do what every president who came before him did, and what every president who followed him would do, until Donald Trump. Donald Trump lost the presidential election in 2020. The American people voted him out of office. It was not because of a rigged system. It was not because of voter fraud. Don't believe me? Hear what his former attorney general had to say about it. I warn those who watching that this contains strong language.
Now, just what I had three discussions with the president that I can recall. One was on November 23rd, one was on December 1st, and one was on December 14th. And I've been through sort of the give and take of those discussions. And in that context, I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. And, I didn't want to be a part of it, and that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did. I observed, I think it was on December 1st, that, you can't live in a world where the incumbent administration stays in power based on its view, unsupported by specific evidence, that there was fraud in the election.
Bill Barr, on Election Day 2020, he was the Attorney General of the United States, the top law enforcement official in the country, telling the president exactly what he thought about claims of a stolen election. Donald Trump had his days in court to challenge the results. He was within his rights to seek those judgments. In the United States, law-abiding citizens have those tools for pursuing justice. He lost in the courts.
just as he did at the ballot box. And in this country, that's the end of the line. But for Donald Trump, that was only the beginning of what became a sprawling, multi-step conspiracy aimed at overturning the presidential election, aimed at throwing out the votes of millions of Americans, your votes, your voice in our democracy, and replacing the will of the American people with his will to remain in power after his term ended. Donald Trump was at the center of this conspiracy, and ultimately, Donald Trump, the President of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy. Any legal jargon you hear about seditious conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, conspiracy to defraud the United States, boils down to this. January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government. The violence was no accident. It represents Senate Trump's last stand, most desperate chance to halt the transfer of power. Now you may hear those words and think, this is just another political attack on Donald Trump by people who don't like him. That's not the case. My colleagues and I all wanted an outside independent commission to investigate January 6th, similar to what we had after 9/11. But after first agreeing to the idea, Donald Trump's allies in Congress put a stop to it. Apparently, they don't want January 6th investigated at all. And in the last 17 months, many of those same people have tried to whitewash what happened on January 6th, to rewrite history, call it a tourist visit, label it legitimate political discourse. Donald Trump and his followers have adopted the words of the songwriter, "Do you believe me or your lying eyes?" We can't sweep what happened under the rug. The American people deserve answers. So I come before you this evening not as a Democrat, but as an American who swore an oath to defend the Constitution. The Constitution doesn't protect just Democrats or just Republicans. It protects all of us, we the people. And this scheme was an attempt to undermine the will of the people. So tonight, and over the next few weeks, we're going to remind you of the reality of what happened that day. But our work must do much more than just look backwards. The cause of our democracy remains in danger. The conspiracy to thwart the will of the people is not over. There are those in this audience who thirst for power but have no love or respect for what makes America great, devotion to the Constitution, allegiance to the rule of law, our shared journey to build a more perfect union. January 6th and the lies that led to insurrection have put 2.5 centuries of constitutional democracy at risk. The world is watching what we do here. America has long been expected to be a shining city on the hill, a beacon of hope and freedom, a model for others when we are at our best. How can we play that role when our house is in such disorder? We must confront the truth with candor, resolve, and determination. We need to show that we are worthy of the gifts that are the birthright of every American. That begins here, and it begins now, with a true accounting of what happened and what led to the attack on our Constitution and our democracy. In this moment, when the dangers of our Constitution and our democracy loom large, nothing could be more important. Working alongside the public servants on this dais has been one of the greatest honors of my time in Congress. It's been a particular privilege to count as a partner in this effort and to count as a friend the gentlewoman woman from Wyoming, Ms. Cheney. She's a patriot, a public servant of profound courage, of devotion to her oath and the Constitution. It's my pleasure to recognize Ms. Cheney for her opening statement.
Now, as Benny Thompson, he's the chair of the subcommittee, of the committee, that's investigating all this. And as you can tell with his little Mississippi drawl, he's very, very honest and sincere. He doesn't give you that razzmatazz, flamboyant bull that these other Republican senators want to give you. Like, I'm just a old country lawyer. When they come up with that, I'm just an old country lawyer. The man went to Oxford and graduated, and he talks plain as hell when he's not on TV. You know he's a liar. And we know who, and I only have to mention that liar's name. But we don't have to go into that. But these are how these people are. We can't sweep this under the rug anymore, was one of the things that Benny Thompson said. We can't sweep it under the rug. This, I believe, and I think, is worse than the Civil War interruption. At least those people had a specific idea of why they wanted certain things and that the other people didn't want the same things. But they were not... They didn't want to get rid of their country. These people are just following the dumb dog that's running in the woods. And he is a dumb dog. You'll find out when the hearings are over how dumb he is. Now, this is a major problem because if this man wasn't as dumb and this was someone that was smart that did this, this could have worked. The country could be gone now. And we'd have an authoritarian, the head of this country, and not a president. And it wouldn't be a United States. You go back and say, well, it wouldn't be a United States, therefore it would be a civil war. It probably would be a civil war. But it wouldn't be a civil war against North against South. It begins a civil war of the haves against the have-nots and the haves against the haves who did not want these people to succeed. We have Kissinger. We have, not Kissinger. Kissinger. And we have Cheney. The only two that had enough of a problem of giving up this country. They didn't want to give up this country. And they knew darn well losing in the courts over 60 times with your rhetoric and bull that he was pushing out on the people. Oh yeah, I didn't lose nothing. That we were robbed. He had his own attorney general who we all know was acting like a criminal himself, but would not put one more foot over that line into the outrageous territory of complete lie. He told the president on more than one occasion, as you heard in the previous few minutes, that there was no stealing of votes. There was no lying about who won the election, that he did not win the election. He was told that. But he still went on with it. He still went on with saying, oh, no, I really won. No, he didn't win. He did not win. But this was his only way to get out of losing. He had Giuliani, mayor of New York City, the largest city in the United States, supposedly the top cop, not including the attorney general, because he was the attorney general of New York City, which might as well be the attorney general of the United States. Wouldn't that be something if he would have been selected as the attorney general and didn't run for president? That shows you where these guys like Trump, they don't want to be anything more than gods. They don't want to take, they believe, lesser jobs. They don't want to. They want to be able to dictate to you forever and show you they are the smartest person in the world. Well, Elizabeth Cheney, who, listen, tell you the truth, Elizabeth Cheney, I wouldn't trust more than Donald Trump. But you know what? She has showed that she is someone who is not going to give up this country. She has shown us that she, her father, who is known as Darth Vader, she has shown that she is for the country first, her politics second. This is what she said. She was introduced by Chairman Bernie Sanders, and this is what she had to say.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And let me echo those words about the importance of bipartisanship and what a tremendous honor it is to work on this committee. Mr. Chairman, at 6:01 p.m. on January 6th, after he spent hours watching a violent mob besiege, attack, and invade our Capitol, Donald Trump tweeted, but he did not condemn the attack. Instead, he justified it. These are the things and events that happen, he said, when a sacred landslide election victory is so unceremoniously and viciously stripped away from great patriots who've been badly and unfairly treated for so long. As you will see in the hearings to come, President Trump believed his supporters at the Capitol, and I quote, were doing what they should be doing. This is what he told his staff as they pleaded with him to call off the mob, to instruct his supporters to leave. Over a series of hearings in the coming weeks, you will hear testimony, live and on video, from more than half a dozen former White House staff in the Trump administration, all of whom were in the West Wing of the White House on January 6th. You will hear testimony that, quote, the president did not really want to put anything out, calling off the riot or asking his supporters to leave. You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it. You will hear evidence that President Trump refused for hours to do what his staff his family, and many of his other advisors begged him to do. Immediately instruct his supporters to stand down and evacuate the Capitol. Tonight, you will see never-before-seen footage of the brutal attack on our Capitol. An attack that unfolded while a few blocks away, President Trump sat watching television in the dining room next to the Oval Office. You will hear audio from the brave police officers battling for their lives and ours, fighting to defend our democracy against a violent mob Donald Trump refused to call off. Tonight and in the weeks to come, you will see evidence of what motivated this violence, including directly from those who participated in this attack. You will see video of them explaining what caused them to do it. You will see their posts on social media. We will show you what they have said in federal court. On this point, there is no room for debate. Those who invaded our Capitol and battled law enforcement for hours were motivated by what President Trump had told them, that the election was stolen and that he was the rightful president. President Trump summoned the mob, assembled the mob, and lit the flame of this attack. You will also hear about plots to commit seditious conspiracy on January 6th. A crime defined in our laws as conspiring to overthrow, put down, or destroy by force the government of the United States, or to oppose by force the authority thereof. Multiple members of two groups, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, have been charged with this crime for their involvement in the events leading up to and on January 6th. Some have pled guilty. The attack on our Capitol was not a spontaneous riot. Intelligence available before January 6th identified plans to, quote, invade the Capitol, occupy the Capitol, and take other steps to halt Congress's count of electoral votes that day. In our hearings to come, we will identify elements of those plans, and we will show specifically how a group of Proud Boys led a mob into the Capitol building on January 6th. Tonight, I am going to describe for you some of what our committee has learned and highlight initial findings you will see this month in our hearings. As you hear this, all Americans should keep in mind this fact. On the morning of January 6th, President Donald Trump's intention was to remain President of the United States despite the lawful outcome of the 2020 election and in violation of his constitutional obligation to relinquish power. Over multiple months, Donald Trump oversaw and coordinated a sophisticated seven-part plan to overturn the presidential election and prevent the transfer of presidential power. In our hearings, you will see evidence of each element of this plan. In our second hearing, you will see that Donald Trump and his advisors knew that he had in fact lost the election. But despite this, President Trump engaged in a massive effort to spread false and fraudulent information to convince huge portions of the U.S. population that fraud had stolen the election from him. This was not true. Jason Miller was a senior Trump campaign spokesman. In this clip, Miller described the call between the Trump campaign's internal data expert and President Trump a few days after the 2020 election.
I was in the Oval Office, and at some point in the conversation, Matt Oskowski, who is the lead data person, was brought on, and I remember he delivered to the president pretty blunt terms that he was going to lose.
And that was based, Mr. Miller, on Matt and the data team's assessment of the sort of county by county, state by state results as reported?
Correct.
Alex Cannon was one of President Trump's campaign lawyers. He previously worked for the Trump Organization. One of his responsibilities was to assess allegations of election fraud in November 2020. Here is one sample of his testimony discussing what he told White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
I remember a call with Mr. Meadows, where Mr. Meadows was asking me what I was finding and if I was finding anything. And I remember sharing with him that we weren't finding anything that would be sufficient to change the results in any of the key states.
When was that conversation?
Probably in November, mid to late November. I think it was before my child was born.
And what was Mr. Meadows' reaction to that information?
I believe the words he used were, so there's no there there.
There's no there there. The Trump campaign's general counsel, Matt Morgan, gave similar testimony. He explained that all of the fraud allegations and the campaign's other election arguments, taken together and viewed in the best possible light for President Trump, could still not change the outcome of the election. President Trump's Attorney General Bill Barr also told Donald Trump his election claims were wrong.
Repeatedly told the president in no uncertain terms that I did not see evidence of fraud and you know, that would have affected the outcome of the election. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
Attorney General Barr also told President Trump that his allegations about Dominion voting machines were groundless.
I saw absolutely zero basis for the allegations, but they were made in such a sensational way that they obviously were influencing a lot of people, members of the public, that there was this systemic corruption in the system and that their votes didn't count and that these machines controlled by somebody else were actually determining it, which was complete nonsense. And it was being laid out there, and I told them that it was crazy stuff and they were wasting their time on that. And it was doing a great, great disservice to the country.
But President Trump persisted, repeating the false Dominion allegations in public at least a dozen more times, even after his attorney general told him they were, quote, complete nonsense. And after Barr's resignation on December 23rd, the acting attorney general who replaced him, Jeff Rosen, and the acting deputy, Richard Donahue, told President Trump over and over again that the evidence did not support allegations he was making in public. Many of President Trump's White House staff also recognized that the evidence did not support the claims President Trump was making. This is the president's daughter commenting on Bill Barr's statement that the department found no fraud sufficient to overturn the election.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he said, was saying.
As you will hear on Monday, the president had every right to litigate his campaign claims, but he ultimately lost more than 60 cases in state and federal courts. The president's claims in the election cases were so frivolous and unsupported that the president's lead lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, not only lost the lawsuits, his license to practice law was suspended. Here's what the court said of Mr. Giuliani. Giuliani communicated demonstrably false and misleading statements to courts, lawmakers, and the public at large in his capacity as lawyer for former President Donald J. Trump and the Trump campaign in connection with Trump's failed effort at re-election in 2020. As you will see in great detail in our hearings, President Trump ignored the rulings of our nation's courts. He ignored his own campaign leadership, his White House staff, many Republican state officials. He ignored the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security. President Trump invested millions of dollars of campaign funds purposely spreading false information, running ads he knew were false, and convincing millions of Americans that the election was corrupt and that he was the true president. As you will see, this misinformation campaign provoked the violence on January 6th. In our third hearing, you will see that President Trump corruptly planned to replace the Attorney General of the United States so the U.S. Justice Department would spread his false stolen election claims. In the days before January 6th, President Trump told his top Justice Department officials, quote, just say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman. Senior Justice Department officials, men he had appointed, told him they could not do that because it was not true. So President Trump decided to replace them. He offered Jeff Clark, an environmental lawyer at the Justice Department, the job of acting Attorney General. President Trump wanted Mr. Clark to take a number of steps, including sending this letter to Georgia and five other states, saying the U.S. Department of Justice had, quote, identified significant concerns that may have impacted the outcome of the election. This letter is a lie. The Department of Justice had, in fact, repeatedly told President Trump exactly the opposite, that they had investigated his stolen election allegations and found no credible fraud that could impact the outcome of the election. This letter and others like it would have urged multiple states to withdraw their official and lawful electoral votes for Biden. Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue described Jeff Clark's letter this way, quote, this would be a grave step for the department to take and could have tremendous constitutional, political, and social ramifications for this country. The committee agrees with Mr. Donahue's assessment. Had Clark assumed the role of Attorney General in the days before January 6th and issued these letters, the ramifications could indeed have been grave. Mr. Donahue also said this about Clark's plan.
And I recall toward the end saying, what you're proposing is nothing less than the United States Justice Department meddling in the outcome of a presidential election.
In our hearings, you will hear firsthand how the senior leadership of the Department of Justice threatened to resign, how the White House counsel threatened to resign, and how they confronted Donald Trump and Jeff Clark in the Oval Office. The men involved, including Acting Attorney General Jeff Rosen and Acting Deputy Attorney General Richard Donahue, were appointed by President Trump. These men honored their oaths of office, they did their duty, and you will hear from them in our hearings. By contrast, Jeff Clark has invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination and refused to testify. Representative Scott Perry, who is also involved in trying to get Clark appointed as Attorney General, has refused to testify here. As you will see, Representative Perry contacted the White House in the weeks after January 6th to seek a presidential pardon. Multiple other Republican congressmen also sought presidential pardons for their roles in attempting to overturn the 2020 election. In our fourth hearing, we will focus on President Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to count electoral votes on January 6th. Vice President Pence has spoken publicly about this.
President Trump is wrong. I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. And frankly, there is no idea more un-American than the notion that any one person could choose the American president.
What President Trump demanded that Mike Pence do wasn't just wrong. It was illegal and it was unconstitutional. You will hear this in great detail from the Vice President's former general counsel. Witnesses in these hearings will explain how the former vice president and his staff informed President Trump over and over again that what he was pressuring Mike Pence to do was illegal. As you will hear, President Trump engaged in a relentless effort to pressure Pence, both in private and in public. You will see the evidence of that pressure from multiple witnesses, live and on video. Vice President Pence demonstrated his loyalty to Donald Trump consistently over 4 years. But he knew that he had a higher duty to the United States Constitution. This is testimony from the Vice President's Chief of Staff.
And
the president?
Well, I think the vice president was proud of his 4 years of service, and he felt like much had been accomplished in those 4 years. And I think he was proud to have stood beside the president for all that had been done. But I think he ultimately knew that his fidelity to the Constitution was his first and foremost oath. And that's what he articulated publicly, and I think that that's what he felt.
His fidelity to the Constitution was more important than his fidelity to President Trump and his
oath he took. Yep.
Yes.
You'll also hear about a lawyer named John Eastman. Mr. Eastman was deeply involved in President Trump's plans. You'll hear from former Fourth Circuit federal judge Michael Luttig, a highly respected leading conservative judge. John Eastman clerked for Judge Luttig. Judge Luttig provided counsel to the vice president's team in the days before January 6th. The judge will explain how Eastman, quote, was wrong at every turn. And you will see the email exchanges between Eastman and the vice president's counsel as the violent attack on Congress was underway. Mr. Jacob said this to Mr. Eastman, thanks to your bullshit, we are under siege. You will also see evidence that John Eastman did not actually believe the legal position he was taking. In fact, a month before the 2020 election, Eastman took exactly the opposite view on the same legal issues. In the course of the Select Committee's work to obtain information from Mr. Eastman, we have had occasion to present evidence to a federal judge. The judge evaluated the facts, and he reached the conclusion that President Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Pence to act illegally by refusing to count electoral votes likely violated two federal criminal statutes. And the judge also said this, if Dr. Eastman and President Trump's plan had worked, it would have permanently ended the peaceful transition of power, undermining American democracy and the Constitution. If the country does not commit to investigating and pursuing accountability for those responsible, the court fears January 6th will repeat itself. Every American should read what this federal judge has written. The same judge, Judge Carter, issued another decision on Tuesday night, just this week, indicating that John Eastman and other Trump lawyers knew that their legal arguments had no real chance of success in court, but they relied on those arguments anyway to try to, quote, overturn a Democratic election. And you will hear that while Congress was under attack on January 6th and the hours following the violence, the Trump legal team in the Willard Hotel War Room continued to work to halt the count of electoral votes. In our fifth hearing, you will see evidence that President Trump corruptly pressured state legislators and election officials to change election results. You will hear additional details about President Trump's call to Georgia officials, urging them to, quote, find 11,780 votes, votes that did not exist, and his efforts to get states to rescind certified electoral slates without factual basis and contrary to law. You will hear new details about the Trump campaign and other Trump associates' efforts to instruct Republican officials in multiple states to create intentionally false electoral slates and transmit those slates to Congress, to the Vice President, and the National Archives, falsely certifying that Trump won states he actually lost. In our final two June hearings, you will hear how President Trump summoned a violent mob and directed them illegally to march on the United States Capitol. While the violence was underway, President Trump failed to take immediate action to stop the violence and instruct his supporters to leave the Capitol. As we present these initial findings, keep two points in mind. First, our investigation is still ongoing, so what we make public here will not be the complete set of information we will ultimately disclose. And second, the Department of Justice is currently working with cooperating witnesses and has disclosed to date only some of the information it has identified from encrypted communications and other sources. On December 18, 2020, a group including General Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and others visited the White House. They stayed late into the evening. We know that the group discussed a number of dramatic steps, including having the military seize voting machines and potentially rerun elections. You will also hear that President Trump met with that group alone for a period of time before White House lawyers and other staff discovered the group was there and rushed to intervene. A little more than an hour after Ms. Powell, Mr. Giuliani, General Flynn, and the others finally left the White House, President Trump sent the tweet on the screen now, telling people to come to Washington on January 6th. Be there, he instructed them. We'll be wild. As you will see, this was a pivotal moment. This tweet initiated a chain of events. The tweet led to the planning for what occurred on January 6th, including by the Proud Boys, who ultimately led the invasion of the Capitol and the violence on that day. The indictment of a group of Proud Boys alleges that they planned, quote, to oppose by force the authority of the government of the United States. And according to the Department of Justice, on January 6, 2021, the defendants directed, mobilized, and led members of the crowd onto the Capitol grounds and into the Capitol, leading to the dismantling of metal barricades, the destruction of property, the breaching of the Capitol building, and the assaults on law enforcement. Although certain former Trump officials have argued that they did not anticipate violence on January 6th, the evidence suggests otherwise. As you will see in our hearings, the White House was receiving specific reports in the days leading up to January 6th, including during President Trump's Ellipse rally, indicating that elements in the crowd were preparing for violence at the Capitol. And on the evening of January 5th, the president's close advisor, Steve Bannon, said this on his podcast.
All hell is going to break loose tomorrow. Just understand this. All hell is going to break loose tomorrow.
As part of our investigation, we will present information about what the White House and other intelligence agencies knew and why the Capitol was not better prepared. But we will not lose sight of the fact that the Capitol Police did not cause the crowd to attack. And we will not blame the violence that day, violence provoked by Donald Trump, on the officers who bravely defended all of us. In our final hearing, you will hear a moment-by-moment account of the hours-long attack from more than half a dozen White House staff, both live in the hearing room and via videotaped testimony. There's no doubt that President Trump was well aware of the violence as it developed. White House staff urged President Trump to intervene and call off the mob. Here is a document written while the attack was underway by a member of the White House staff, advising what the president needed to say. Quote, anyone who entered the Capitol without proper authority should leave immediately. This is exactly what his supporters on Capitol Hill and nationwide were urging the president to do. He would not. You will hear that leaders on Capitol Hill begged the president for help, including Republican leader McCarthy, who was, quote, scared, and called multiple members of President Trump's family after he could not persuade the president himself. Not only did President Trump refuse to tell the mob to leave the Capitol, he placed no call to any element of the United States government to instruct that the Capitol be defended. He did not call his Secretary of Defense on January 6th. He did not talk to his Attorney General. He did not talk to the Department of Homeland Security. President Trump gave no order to deploy the National Guard that day, and he made no effort to work with the Department of Justice to coordinate and deploy law enforcement assets. But Vice President Pence did each of those things. For example, here is what General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, testified to this committee.
There were two or three calls with Vice President Pence. He was very animated, and he issued very explicit, very direct, unambiguous orders. There was no question about that. And I can get you the exact quotes, I guess, from some of our records somewhere, but he was very animated, very direct, very firm, and to Secretary Milley, get the military down here, get the guard down here, put down this situation.
et cetera.
By contrast, here is General Milley's description of his conversation with President Trump's Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, on January 6th.
He said, we have to kill the narrative that the Vice President is making all the decisions. We need to establish the narrative that that the President is still in charge and that things are steady or stable or what's that thing. I immediately interpret that as politics, politics, politics. Red flag for me personally, no action, but I remember just thinking.
And you will hear from witnesses how the day played out inside the White House, how multiple White House staff resigned in disgust, and how President Trump would not ask his supporters to leave the Capitol. It was only after multiple hours of violence that President Trump finally released a video instructing the riotous mob to leave. And as he did so, he said to them, quote, "We love you, and you're very special." You will also hear that in the immediate aftermath of January 6th, members of the President's family, White House staff, and others tried to step in to stabilize the situation, quote, "to land the plane before the presidential transition on January 20th. You will hear about members of the Trump cabinet discussing the possibility of invoking the 25th Amendment and replacing the President of the United States. Multiple members of President Trump's own cabinet resigned immediately after January 6th. One member of the cabinet suggested that the remaining cabinet officers needed to take a more active role in running the White House and the administration. But most emblematic of those days is this exchange of texts between Sean Hannity and former President Trump's press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany. Sean Hannity wrote, in part, "Key now, no more crazy people, no more stolen election talk. Yes, impeachment and 25th Amendment are real. Many people will quit." Ms. McEnany responded in part, "Love that. That's the playbook." The White House staff knew that President Trump was willing to entertain and use conspiracy theories to achieve his ends. They knew the president needed to be cut off from all of those who had encouraged him. They knew that President Donald Trump was too dangerous to be left alone, at least until he left office on January 20th. These are important facts for Congress and the American people to understand fully. When a president fails to take the steps necessary to preserve our union, or worse, causes a constitutional crisis, we're in a moment of maximum danger for our republic. Some in the White House took responsible steps to try to prevent January 6th. Others egged the president on. Others, who could have acted, refused to do so. In this case, the White House counsel was so concerned about potentially lawless activity that he threatened to resign multiple times. That is exceedingly rare and exceedingly serious. It requires immediate attention, especially when the entire team threatens to resign. However, in the Trump White House, it was not exceedingly rare, and it was not treated seriously. This is a clip of Jared Kushner addressing multiple threats by White House counsel Pat Cipollone and his team of lawyers to resign in the weeks before January 6th. Jared, are you aware of instances where Pat Cipollone threatened to resign?
I kind of, like I said, my interest at that time was on trying to get as many pardons done. And I know that, you know, he was always, him and the team were always saying, "Oh, we're going to resign. We're not going to be here if this happens, if that happens." So I kind of took it up to just be whining, to be honest with you.
Whining. There's a reason why people serving in our government take an oath to the Constitution. As our founding fathers recognized, democracy is fragile. People in positions of public trust are duty-bound to defend it, to step forward when action is required. In our country, we don't swear an oath to an individual or a political party. We take our oath to defend the United States Constitution. And that oath must mean something. Tonight, I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain. Finally, I ask all of our fellow Americans, as you watch our hearings over the coming weeks, please remember what's at stake. Remember the men and women who have fought and died so that we can live under the rule of law, not the rule of men. I ask you to think of the scene in our Capitol Rotunda on the night of January 6th. There, in a sacred space in our constitutional republic, the place where our presidents lie in state, watched over by statues of Washington and Jefferson, Lincoln and Grant, Eisenhower, Ford, and Reagan. Against every wall that night encircling the room, there were SWAT teams, men and women in tactical gear with long guns, deployed inside our Capitol building. There in the rotunda, these brave men and women rested beneath paintings, depicting the earliest scenes of our republic, including one painted in 1824, depicting George Washington resigning his commission, voluntarily relinquishing power, handing control of the Continental Army back to Congress. With this noble act, Washington set the indispensable example of the peaceful transfer of power, what President Reagan called nothing less than a miracle. The sacred obligation to defend this peaceful transfer of power has been honored by every American president, except one. As Americans, we all have a duty to ensure that what happened on January 6th never happens again, to set aside partisan battles, to stand together to perpetuate and preserve our great republic. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I can't believe I didn't have that on. I wasn't talking to anybody. I'm sorry. For 10 minutes I'm talking. Well, let me do a little recap here. I'm sorry, that was my fault. I didn't have the button pressed. He was going to this man, orange man in the White House, was going to replace all the people in the Department of Justice. Now, it takes us forever to do that, but he, what is it? Autocrat. He just waves his hand. He says, you appoint the people below. Everyone else is fired. He waves his hand. Off with the head. He says, I want to go. And then all of them wanted to quit. Everybody, every last one. So, we're talking about 1,000 people or more than 1,000 people, more than 1,000 people. He couldn't do that in one day. That's what it would take. Then calling the National Guard, who was the head of the Joint Chiefs, said, hey, we got a problem down there. You got to do something about it. I know you guys are not supposed to be involved in this, but he could have called out the National Guard. He could have called them out. He didn't. And many of the members of the cabinet were going to resign. Just get out. They were going to resign. I mean, that's how it was. They were going to do that. Sean Hannity was beside himself. Laura Ingraham was beside herself. Tucker Carlson is way beside himself. But because they have Sean Hannity's text messages to McEnany. He texts her, look, we got a problem here. She said, you're absolutely right. He said, we have a major problem here. She said, you are absolutely right. So why was he even involved in this? Because he's a friend? Well, if he's just a friend, why is he every single night advising him what he's supposed to do? Is he a member of the cabinet? Now, the last thing here is people who will resign. This has never come to fruit. before anything like this has ever happened before in any other organization. It has never come. Now, last night, Trump went way crazy over what Barr said. He went really off the rails. Dylan Stapleford, he's a senior reporter, senior writer, he said that after January 6th committee, it said that he had uncovered evidence that former President Donald Trump was at the center of the conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election. And Trump lashed out at the panel's primetime presentation. In post Friday on the fledgling social media platform Truth Social, Trump downplayed the deadly attack on the U.S. Capitol by a violent mob of his supporters on January 6, 2021, and denied he incited it. Oh, we all know. We saw, you know, this is nothing. He is a major opponent, major proponent of, hey, don't believe your lying eyes. Don't believe what I say, and don't believe what you see, because they're all lying. But believe when I tell you to listen, I'm telling you the truth. The so-called rush on the Capitol was not caused by me, he said. It was caused by a rigged and stolen election. Oh, an election went to get that? Election, are they people? I mean, this is completely outrageous. Trump rallied against former Attorney General William Barr, who was shown on video testifying to the bipartisan committee that he had told Trump repeatedly that his election fraud claims were bull. Bill Barr was a weak and fragile Attorney General who was always being played and threatened by the Democrats and was scared off by impeachment. Trump wrote in one post, how do you not get impeached? Do nothing or say nothing, especially about the obviously rigged and stolen election? The Democrats hit pay dirt with Barr, Trump continued. He was stupid, ridiculously said there was no problem with the election, and they left him alone. In another post, Trump referred to Barr as a coward who had specifically refused to investigate his claims of rampant fraud in Philadelphia. The former president did not offer evidence to support any of his claims. The news hangs on a makeshift gallows on January 6, 2021, as supporters then President Trump, Donald Trump, stormed the Capitol. Remember that. Trump disputed the assertion that Representative Liz Cheney from Wyoming, the committee's vice chair, who said that testimony from his aides will show Trump was not concerned that his supporters were threatening Vice Cheney Mike Pence's life. On January 6th, according to Cheney, when Trump learned that they were chanting, hang Mike Pence, he said, maybe our supporters have the right idea, added that Pence deserves it. This is what he said. I never said that or even thought of saying that. Hang Mike Pence, Trump wrote, this is either a made-up story, somebody looking to become a star, or fake news. Trump also seemed to shrug off video of testimony by his daughter and advisor, Ivanka Trump, who told the committee that she agreed with Barr that there was no evidence to support her father's claim of election fraud and that she accepted his loss. Ivanka was not involved in looking at or studying election results, Trump wrote. He had long since checked out and was, in my opinion, only trying to be respectful to Bill Barr and his position as Attorney General, he said. By the way, the riders got within two doors of Vice President Mike Pence's office. That's all. We're looking at something that is so ludicrous and so nonsensical that this is what this man, every day, you know, it's like my surgeon told me when I had my knee operation. My first knee operation was fabulous. 5 weeks I was out running around like I never had a knee problem before. Then I had my second knee operation. I'm telling you, it's been over a year. It was a year, the 21st of April 5th this year. And I just started to getting up out of chairs without any pain. Just started. That's how bad it was. The Proud Boys, as we said before, are very much involved in this. They are very much involved in this. More than the Oath Keepers, even. Oath Keepers are just the followers of the Proud Boys. And remember, and Rico Tarrio, he's the head of the Hispanics in Miami. Was. Now he's jailed. Yeah. And that's why he's been in and out of the White House multiple times. Just listen to this conspiracy here.
This is one of the reasons that I have long objected to calling what happened on January 6th a riot. Because the lack of a riot implies some spontaneity, some passion in the moment that causes people to go wild. This was a pre-planned going wild because Donald Trump literally said, we're going to go wild. And he said the date when they were going to go wild. One of his chief advisors said the day before, it's going to be wild. This was planned. This reads more, and looking at the footage of it and watching the body-worn camera and all of the camera from the Capitol, this was a war being made upon the United States by the President of the United States. It was planned like a war. It had stacks of people entering the Capitol. You don't enter the Capitol in stacks during a riot, right? This was a very coordinated, deliberate attack on the Capitol for a very specific purpose, to prevent the people inside the Capitol from completing the ceremonial certification of the vote. And I think the timeline is very important. Donald Trump starts speaking at noon.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Quested talks about something like 10 in the morning. 10:30 in the morning. Donald Trump started speaking at noon. The disconnection between the ellipse and what happened there and what happened in the Capitol is that the plan, to your point, was that you needed to rouse the crowd, get Donald Trump to get them excited and get the passion going.
And to tell them where to go.
And tell them where to go. But he had stacks of people. And just one more thing, let's not forget who Enrique Tarrio is. One of the things I thought was interesting, during the video, you saw all the labeling of who were Proud Boys. And you only saw Proud Boys. I didn't see Oath Keepers. You saw the meeting.
One quick Stuart Rhodes thing.
So
that was
Stuart
weird.
Rhodes. But yeah, but
it was
quick, right?
It was all Proud Boys.
But it was mostly Proud Boys. The Proud Boys were the stand-back, stand-by guys. Enrique Tarrio used to be the head of Latinos for Trump in Miami-Dade. The first time I heard of Enrique Tarrio is he was the guy who led a screaming, proto-violent attack on Speaker Pelosi,
yep,
when she came down to Miami.
Right, at that Miami Pelosi event.
At Miami,
yep.
And so he's
completely
been around for a while.
Yeah.
He was in the White House getting to sort of convene. He wasn't meeting with Trump, but he was there as Latinos for Trump director. And last thing, his organization, the Proud Boys, now literally controls the Miami-Dade Republican Party.
Yeah.
They are in control of a political party in a key state, a key swing state in this country. They are not just a group of insurrectionist thugs. They are a political organization directly tied to and loyal to Donald Trump.
Now, they are not an organization that's by themselves, that a political thug organization. That's what they are. Political thugs. That's what they are. And to tell you what else is so outrageous here, The January 6th shows, there's a video to show the staff, a video of staff fleeing Kevin McCarthy's office during the Capitol attack. Why were they fleeing? Why were they running? Was there a sale at Walmart? No. See that the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack also found, and we're going to see it, never before shown the footage of staff evacuating Republican Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's office as a violent mob stormed in the building. The video shows that on Thursday evening at the opening of the first public hearing held by the committee said they would provide evidence to show that Donald Trump's attempted to overturn the 2020 election. In the days after the attack, Mr. McCarthy, the top House Republican, said Donald Trump bears responsibility for the attack. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. Yet, Mr. McCarthy later walked back his comments and said since he denounced the work of the January 6th committee, I also think everybody across the country has some responsibility. He said in an interview 2 weeks after the attack. Committee's Vice Chair Liz Cheney said earlier in the hearing that Mr. Trump expressed support for his followers who wanted to hang Mike Pence. This is the President of the United States. Why are you even talking about hanging Mike Pence? Committee's Vice Chair Liz Cheney said earlier in the hearing that Mr. Trump expressed support for his followers who wanted to hang Mike Pence. And as thousands of Donald Trump supporters were storming the U.S. Capitol and chants of hang Mike Pence rang out from the angry mob, the then president purportedly told advisors that his vice president deserved it. The alleged remarks, Mr. Trump was heard by former staff who were present, who were present in the room when he spoke, according to Ms. Cheney. Ms. Cheney said the committee would present testimony from more than a half a dozen former White House staff of the Trump administration who were present in the West Wing on that day. You will hear that President Trump was yelling. He was really angry at advisors and told him he needed to be doing something. He needed to be doing something more, she said. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with his statement, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Ms. Cheney's remarks came at the opening of the first hearing of the House Committee investigating January 6th insurrection and Donald Trump's attempt to overturn the 2020 election on Thursday evening. The committee has promised never before seen video and a mass of other evidence in its public hearing and said it would be directly linked, Mr. Trump, to the attempted insurrection. Now, what do you think of that? What do you think of that? I mean, it's coming down to it. What are you going to think of that? There's not too much you can think of when you say that. This man is completely off the rails. He's completely off the rail. And whether or not the conspirators got together the day of or the day before, what they were doing was against the law. And as I was telling to all the people who listened to me, they said, oh, he's going to get away with it again. Listen, he won't get away with it again. There will be a time when they will rewrite Trump's law. And as Liz Cheney said, there will come a day when Donald Trump is gone. And all those supposedly Republicans, their dishonor will always remain. And the duty of this committee is to make sure that every American citizen knows what happened on January the 6th and that it never happens again. Never happens again. There are many things that could have been said or done by this committee. And I believe that this committee is in the position of putting all the facts on the paper and presenting it to the people. I believe that it might be a little too late because most people in the world are stupid. You know how you used to try to remember to study for a test and she was, I studied that, I remember, why didn't I remember it during the test? Well, you had an excuse to remember it during the test because you were worried about the test. You didn't really study that hard. You try to cram everything in one day. At least you had the information in front of you. These people are making it up as they go along because there is no information that's correct. There is nothing that is correct. Just remember that. There's nothing that's correct.
Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people, they smile when they are low. Yesterday they told you you would not go far. Your dressing room, they hung a star. Let's go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. Closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business, like no business I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And top of that, your partner has parted, you're brokenhearted, but you go on. They are low, even with a turkey that you know will hold. You may be stranded out in the cold, still you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show.
great weekend. And let's go out a little music. All right? Have a great weekend, everybody.
Well, it's the weather, of course. When it's in season.
Now, Mars, I need some ideas. If I'm going to get your town out of the serious trouble it's in.
River City ain't in any trouble.
But then I have to create some. Must create a desperate need in your town for a boys' band. So why does everybody keep rubbering into the billiard parlor?
Oh, they just got in a new pool table.
They must have seen a pool table before.
No, just billiards.
That'll do it. You just sit where you are, and remember, if you see that music teacher...
Are you Mr. Dunlop?
Yeah?
Well, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help me cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to give an ironclad leave to yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a bop-line game, I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on the horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch? Make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got one, two, three, four, five, six pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, your River City youth will be frittering away. I say your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beefsteak pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt-tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now, I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They've been trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMades like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with Sansan one fine night. They leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory. Libertine men and scarlet women and ragtime. Shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle. Animal instinct, masteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yes, oh.
Right here in River City.
Right
with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
Pool.
We surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz-bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. Aha, and so's your old man. But if so, my friends, you got trouble.
Oh, yes,
right here in River City.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
We
surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right here.
Remember the Maine, Plymouth Rock, and the Golden Rule. Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Big, 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 big.